morning, everybody. This is WTBR's Morning Drive. I have someone I have the utmost respect for. I've known him since he was a kid because he's a lot younger than I am. But somebody told me, Bill, you keep saying that, but so's three quarters of the world. So that kind of hurt. But his name is Josh Cutler. We go way back. His mom was a McKeever, and I went to St. Charles School with the McKeevers. And one of my best friends growing up as a kiddo was Frank McKeever, who was a classmate of mine. He was in Vietnam. He's left us. And I often think of him when I interview Josh. So, Josh, how are you this morning?
Good morning, Bill. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
For an old fat ball guy, I'm still here. So I consider that a big event. You've got a phenomenal thing you guys have been doing for 58 years at the temple.
Well,
we're a 30,000 foot overview, then we'll zero in.
So we're really excited. This coming Sunday, August 24th, will mark the 58th annual Hilda Vallon Feigenbaum Memorial Foundation Lecture. And this year, our guest speaker is Marty Baron, who is the retired executive editor of The Washington Post. He's going to be speaking. His topic is the future of journalism. Will a free press survive? And this lecture series was established in 1967. Many people in Pittsfield will remember Drs. Armand and Donald Feigenbaum.
Oh, yeah.
And their profession, they were innovators in the world of quality control and engineering. And so Armand and Donald, after they completed their tenure with General Electric, they decided to go out on their own. And they formed a business called General Systems Company, which had clients all around the world. Yeah. And their headquarters were located for many years in the Berkshire Common, right on South Street in Pittsfield. And at the same time, in 1967, which is around the same time when they formed General Systems, Armand and Donald wanted to create a living legacy to their beloved mother, who Hilda Vallon Feigenbaum. So they, along with Rabbi Salzman, of blessed memory, also from our temple, established this lecture series, which was designed to bring people of all faiths into a Jewish house of worship, free of charge, to hear somebody in the educational world, political, journalism, and we've had some really extraordinary lecturers throughout the years. And again, this is going to be the 58th iteration of this, and I've been a part of it now for a little over a decade, and every year it just continues to get better.
And what I love about it in the thought process behind it, I think they want to open the doors of the temple and bring people in, and that, you know, give them, I don't want to say entertainment, let's say education or information, while doing so. And but what some people, and I could be wrong, but they actually. Everyone gave the Japanese all the credit for I just drew a blank, productive. But what they showed is innovation and how to incorporate total quality management. It was their baby, total quality management, got them recognized.
Yeah, in fact, particularly Armand, he wrote a number of books about total quality management. In fact, he was recognized in 2008. With a medal from President George W. Bush at the White House for being one of the greatest innovators in technology. Yeah. So, you think about all of the great things that have come from Pittsfield and Berkshire County and the work that Armand and Donald did will continue for many, many years to come in the world of manufacturing and engineering. I mean, it's quality control is essential to what they do. So
I was in the Beloit Corporation at the time, and total quality management was the buzz, the initiative, everything. The one thing about the Feigenbaums too, they were very generous to Pittsfield. To the Colonial, the Feigenbaums gave money. To the museum, the Feigenbaums gave money, and to so many other things that I'm glad that you and the temple and people involved are keeping this tradition alive.
Well, not only that, I mean, when Armand and Donald passed, they ensured that this lecture series would continue in perpetuity, but at the same time, also established the Feigenbaum Foundation so that all of the cultural, educational institutions, and so many nonprofits in Berkshire County can continue to thrive with the help of their support as well. I mean, they're, you know, Armand died in 2014 and Donald in 2013, but for sure, the impact that they have on this community is going to be felt for generations to come.
Yeah. And like I said earlier on, I do remember this, and that's pretty good because I don't remember where I parked the car. But he went over to Japan and helped them tune. They had a kind of TQM kind of thing, but he fine tuned it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was just an incredibly trained engineer, Union College, MIT. It's just an absolute genius. And I was lucky enough to actually grow up in the same neighborhood where they lived. I just live right around the corner from Armand and Donald and gratefully had a chance to know both of them a little bit before they passed. They both passed when I was in my mid-20s, but certainly was able to appreciate when they were alive the work that they were doing, both in the United States and in the world for quality management. And then at that time, at the same time, started to realize the philanthropy that they would do in the community.
That's right.
And I didn't realize at the time that was just getting started, honestly.
Yeah. And as brilliant as they were with their fields, they were also brilliant in the financial field and investing in setting this huge mechanism up to continue on long after they have left us.
All right. So, now this lecture series that we have, you know, we years ago, they would be very involved in the speaker selection process as well. And you know, just as they were with their work, they really would do everything they can for this to thrive. And we have a very strong committee of people who have been involved with it, as long as 25 years.
Wow.
We're very dedicated to continuing this tradition in the community. Now, I've been involved with the lecture, I think, since 2012.
Wow.
And the names of the people that we've had are leaders in the worlds of politics, journalism.
Yeah.
Education as well. We had some people in the healthcare field. I mean, in the last couple of years, last year we had John Heilman, who was a notable speaker from MSNBC. The year before, Admiral James Stavridis, retired from the Navy, was just dynamic.
Amazing.
A year before that, in 2022, we had Julian Castro, who is the former mayor of San Antonio and Secretary of Housing and Urban Development under President Obama. He was fabulous as well. I think in 2020, we had Mara Liasson. Mara Liasson is actually the only speaker in all the years that we've repeated.
Oh, wow.
We had her in 2006 in that midterm election.
Oh, wow.
And we decided to bring her back in 2020.
Oh, cool.
Again, Mara Liasson works for both NPR and Fox. Yeah. So she's a pretty well-balanced speaker. Able to talk kind of both sides of the aisle.
Excellent term. She's well balanced. No,
yeah,
I agree 100% with that, because she's in my opinion, one of the few that gives the news her opinion.
Yeah. Well, that was an interesting year as well, of course, with 2020 being COVID. So we really sort of had to up until that point, we had consistently drawn over 300, sometimes even 400 people in person. And that was one of the goals of the lectures, to pack the house. So we wanted to continue even during that year. We had already signed a contract, and we had, we're expecting her in August, as we typically have it. So as the world of Zoom grew, as we're doing this interview now, we sort of found a way how to do that. And so she recorded her interview live from Washington, D.C. To an audience of 400 people on Zoom.
Wow. Yeah, so, Zoom has changed the world. I mean,
it did. Yeah, it did. And at the same time, it also gave us the avenue to be able to stream the lecture for those who are not able to attend in person. And we've been doing that since we were able to reopen the doors to the general community in 2022. And our audience is, as we reopened the doors, our audience came back and has probably grown even bigger than it has, just due to the fact that people around the world can see it now at the same time. So we'll have the 300, 350 people inside the temple building, and then we'll have another 200 to 300 watching online at the same time. So that's without question achieving the intended purpose for that Armin and Donald wanted when we created this lecture years ago.
And the other piece for people that are just tuning in, this is Josh Cutler. We're talking about the 58th annual Feigenbaum Lecture Series at Temple, and I'll let you say it because I always mess it up.
Sure. Yep, the Hilda Valen Feigenbaum Memorial Foundation Lecture.
At
Temple Anshe Emunim, which is on Broad Street in Pittsfield.
Yeah, trust me, folks. Every time I for some reason, I'm just not. But it starts at 7.
And Bill, and just for the audience, is Anshe Emunim. Anshe means people, and Emunim, which is derived from the root word emuna, means faith. So we're the people of faith. And our congregation was established in November of 1869. So we are this November, we'll be celebrating our 156th anniversary.
Well, when Rabbi Josh was there, I would try. Finally, he just said, I'll do it, Bill. but I do want to let the people know also the date of this lecture is Sunday, August 24th, 7:30 p.m. And you're ready? Operative word, it's free.
It is free. We do ask that people register in advance. Our website, yes. We do have a link. It's on ansheemunim.org, ansheemunim.org. And there will be a link to sign up. It's just so that we can check you in at the door at the beginning.
It is really, I've been to one, and I'm trying to, who the person, this is awful because I don't remember where I parked the car, but I went to one many years ago, and I left there just totally impressed with the level of the knowledge of the speaker, and I'll ask Roseanne when she comes home.
Sure. I mean, we've had some incredible speakers over the years. And I want to say that in 2000, the lecture series sort of turned a corner a little bit when our president at the time, Andy Hochberg, decided to work with the Feigenbaum brothers and sort of change the direction of it and go more in the way that we have, which is more speakers in the world of politics and journalism and kind of worldly affairs. And that speaker that year was Julian Bond, who was the chair of the NAACP for many years.
Yeah.
And
go ahead.
Yeah. And that was sort of the linchpin for changing it in the direction that we've had now. And even some of the people that I mentioned before, but in the years that I've been involved, we had Howard Dean in 2016, former governor of Vermont. And
that's who I saw. Howard Dean.
Notable presidential candidate.
Yeah.
We had Brett Stevens from the Wall Street Journal. Again, a great speaker. A year after that, we had David Gergen, recently passed away, but long time anchor at CNN and worked for a number of presidential administrations. Yeah. I think the first person that I wasn't part of the committee yet, but the first lecture that I attended was 2012, and it was Eleanor Clift, involved with PBS for many years, often seen on the McLaughlin Report.
Yeah.
That was a presidential election year that year. So so she was tremendous. And, you know, and the great thing about the lectures that we have too is we have a pretty reliable audience that comes back year after year. We see a lot of familiar faces, but a lot of new faces as well. And that's just a testament to the work that the committee does to continue to grow the lecture and grow its impact.
And I will tell the listening and viewing audience, if you have an opportunity to do this, it's free. If you have childcare, babysitting, whatever, for if you're young people, or if you're people, you should go to this for two reasons. One, to experience the temple. I've been in it several times for weddings and funerals. And also, this presenter, this year, to me, Martin Baron is a wealth of knowledge about where is journalism today. I mean, I don't want to belabor this point and take Josh's time, but you know, I surf. I surf them. I go from the extreme right to the extreme left, and then I try to figure out in the middle where's the gospel. Because I grew up with Chet Huntley and David Binkley and all the anchors that were reported the news.
Yeah, and you know, even for me, it's funny that you mentioned those names, because the most vivid memory that I have of David Brinkley and Chet Huntley was when the History Channel used to broadcast a program called As It Happened. So the one that I was fascinated with and that my father was fascinated with was the Kennedy assassination, because that just changed everything in
the whole world,
just the whole world. And they would show hours and hours of how they broadcasted that to the nation and reported that news. And it was just amazing to see, you know, how fast news travels and to see the gravitas of that as well, where, you know, you have two human beings that are reporting this to the nation, and they've got to hold their emotions in check as well, because it was a very jarring experience for sure to watch that on television. So, and then, you know, in my lifetime, we had a very similar experience with 9/11, where, you know, everything unfolded live. And, you know, I'm 13 years old when this happens. And when I was in school, I was at Herberg Middle School when 9/11 happened. I was in eighth grade. And at the time, I think the school was, educators didn't really know how to break the news to us. So they said, go home and watch television and just kind of see for yourself kind of what happened. So, you know, I went home and I, you know, saw Peter Jennings and Tom Brokaw and Dan Rather and just kind of
Walter Cronkite, you know, I mean, I relived that. PHS, 10th grade was at Crosby, because they're double, I don't know, so I can't remember what, but I can remember they announced it over the loudspeaker.
Yeah, that's how I learned about it myself in 2001.
I got on the bus to come home, and usually the bus was always some kind of bedlam. You could have heard a pin drop, because the bus driver had, what do they call? I call it a portable radio, but back in those days they had a name for it. Transistor radio hanging from the mirror, and everybody was straining to listen. And then when I got home, that which was never, ever, ever on in my house during the day, the television was on. My mother was crying, and then we were basically glued to that television for that entire period of time.
And you know, it just, things were so very different back then because we didn't have the 24-hour news cycle. Oh. This was just very unique to have, you know, the NBC, ABC, CBS on for, you know, 7-8 hours consecutively. Yeah. And that, and you know, that I often point to that event as, again, how so many things changed, but certainly the news cycle did as well. You saw a very big change back in the 1980s, mid-1980s, when you saw the 24-hour news channels go online, like CNN.
Yeah.
And then and then the advent of the internet in the 1990s, just it made it perpetual. And so things have dramatically changed in this time. And, you know, we're in 2025 now. We're a quarter of a way through the 21st century. And, you know, journalism is going to change once again. And so that's why I'm so excited to have Marty Baron here, because he's lived through every aspect of it, both, you know, probably as a kid and as a student, and then his 4 decades of experience in the world of journalism. And he has experienced it at its very highest level. When he retired, he retired in 2021. He was the executive editor of The Washington Post.
Yeah, and under his leadership, they earned 18 Pulitzer prizes, mm-hmm. including 11 of the Washington Post for the coverage of the attack on the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. The investigation of the National Security Agency and the presidential campaign of Donald Trump. While at the Miami Herald, and I mean, big papers. The newspaper won a Pulitzer Prize for the coverage of the raid to recover Elon Gonzalez, a Cuban boy at the center of a fierce custody dispute. I remember that
I do.
Story.
I do, too. And that's really around the time when I was about 11 or 12, when I'm really starting to get cognizant of the national news. And that was a big story for months about what was happening in Cuba with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, going back again, a little bit of a reminiscent from one old guy and one middle-aged guy. The thing during it, when Kennedy was assassinated, a lot of America took a hard dive. Because I can remember a couple of quotes from Kennedy. Ask not what you can do for your country, but what your country can do for you, but what can you do for your country.
Mm-hmm.
That was one. But the other one was we are going to put a man on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Not because it's easy, but because it's hard. Now, converse that to today a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
We're dropping cursive. There's push to drop algebra,
mm-hmm.
All brain teasers, I call them, because people say, well, when was the last time you used algebra? Well, I can't remember, but it was training my brain at 14.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, I still use it every day. You know, I've worked in the financial field for over a decade. So, you know, I still find value in.
Yeah.
And some of the subjects that some may find, you know, antiquated or boring, but I've made a living off it.
Yeah.
And technology, but technology has changed a lot of things.
Yeah.
You know, even since I was a student, you know, 30 years ago, that was my first experience with a computer, and was when I started kindergarten, but then it continued to grow. But now, you know, my son is starting kindergarten in 3 weeks, and you know, he's going to be exposed to it the second he walks in, and probably a big part of his day. Yeah. But it just, things have changed.
They have, and I hope, and I really do hope that these changes will educate us to the point of being understanding and softening rhetoric and softening views and opening our minds to things like that. Because Right now, I think we're at a turning point of, is technology going to run us, or are we going to run technology?
Right.
You know, I interviewed the guy that did the presentation for the Pittsfield school systems on preparing curriculum for AI. And in a way, I could understand what he was saying, but in a way, I was, because I was fortunate. I went to St. Charles Grammar School through the seventh grade. And the one thing, they trained our brains to think and to solve problems. And I go back to the Kennedy. We're putting a man on the moon, not because it's easy, but because it's hard. And I think today there's this pushback. Oh, that's too hard. And then we'll get off this. I read an article not long ago that said within 10 years, we'll be able to write back and forth to each other in cursive, and our kids won't be able to read it. So there you go.
You know, I certainly understand with that because I've seen many people who don't know how to write their name in cursive or sign, you know, sign a document. It's just times have changed.
They have changed. And folks, I'm here with Josh Cutler. We're here to talk about, well, we're here to talk about several things, but the one thing, focal point is the 58th annual Vegan Bomb lecture at Temple Ashanim.
Anshe Emunim.
Yep, that one too. That both temples, Anshe Emunim, and the whatever one I said. It's on. And Josh will give you. But one of the things that's really important, I want to get out. If you're interested in this, they have a website. Please pre-register. It's very simple. It's all lowercase. www.ANSHEAMUNIM.org.
Yeah, it's gonna be a great evening. Marty is gonna speak for about 40 or 45 minutes. He has some remarks prepared about his topic. I will then moderate a question and answer session where people can submit questions through postcard for about 15 or 20 minutes, and then we have a dessert reception upstairs where you have an opportunity to meet him. If you have one of his books, you can certainly have it signed or take a picture. And it's just a really, really lovely evening in late summer. It's been our tradition for such a long time.
Time. Yeah, Josh just got my attention when he said the dessert thing. He
Free
knows how to get me to these things.
food helps.
Free food helps, trust me. I mean, I always used to go to the Seder, got invited to the Seder supper. I was the first one there. But when we come back from our break, we're going to talk about a bunch of other things. But I do want you to really consider this. To hear what someone whose whole life has been in the news business. And I just think it's going to be a phenomenal experience to hear what he has to say about where it was, where it's been, and where it's going. Because, like Josh just said, I think back, thank you for bringing all that back too. About this Kennedy assassination, and one source of news, the TV. Because the print, while they were good, it was old news by the time it got printed and circulated. And that's kind of what we're seeing a little bit today, don't you think, Josh, with the internet? But what
Again,
I also find in the internet too, it's not a gospel. So.
No, and you know, at one point, there's been certainly several layers to the 24-hour news cycle where, okay, there's the internet, but now we have our phones at our beck and call, you know, every single second of the day. We're scrolling constantly looking for updates. Social media certainly changed the game as well with the, you know, being available 24/7, and it, so, you know, the 10 years from now, there could be something completely different that I don't even have on my radar. It's just the nature of the changes of technology.
Well, I'm thinking in 10 years, they're probably just going to put a chip in our head. And then, check out of the grocery store, just put your head under the scanner. But we're going to be right back. I'm here with Josh Keller. I've known Josh a very long time, think the world of him. And we'll be right back. This is WTBR 89.7 FM on your radio dial, PCTV channel 1301 Spectrum Cable. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. More to come.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Hey, it's Sean from WTBR FM. Whether you just found this station for the first time or you've been listening for years, you might not know everything about WTBR-FM. Want to find out more? It's easy. Just go to WTBRFM.com. You can find full programming schedules, listen to the station anywhere in the world, subscribe to our podcasts, and even learn to create a program of your own. And of course, donate to the station. That's WTBRFM.com. Check it out today.
Greetings, this is John Pollock, host of The Jazz Train, which comes your way every Saturday night from 10 to 11:30. The Jazz Train generally features music recorded on a particular calendar date in years past and provides relevant commentary and discographical details. So why not join me for a ride on The Jazz Train for a weekly musical adventure, coming to you on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, we are back. The good-looking guy you see there is not me. The good-looking guy you see is Josh Cutler. And we're here. We started the – this is a, kind of like a – holistic temple,
Anshe Amunim.
Why do I want to say Anshe Amunim? He said it. They're having a wonderful presentation by Martin Baron. This guy, his whole life has been in journalism. He's won Pulitzer Prizes. And the Washington Times and all the other papers. He's always been at the big ones. But we're doing that. That is taking place Sunday, October the 24th.
August 24th.
I'm sorry. Let's do this again.
Getting a little ahead of ourselves there.
Yeah. This event is taking place, and it's part of the 58th annual Feigenbaum Lecture Series. August the 24th at 7:30 p.m., 26 Broad Street.
Yep.
And we are asking you to pre-register at www.anshe-amunim.org. It promises to be a phenomenal night.
It's going to be a great night. Again, this is actually a very unique one as well, is that Marty Baron lives in the Berkshires. He chose in 2021, when he retired from the Washington Post, to retire here.
Oh, wow.
And I was lucky enough to have a chance to have lunch with him about 6 months ago as we were kind of discussing this night. I had heard from a couple of my committee members that he might be interested in doing it. So we had a lunch, and he chose to retire here because he's a big cycling enthusiast.
Oh, wow.
And the Berkshires, you know, just provide particularly South County, which is where he is. It just provides a very lovely place for him to do that and enjoy that with his time. You know, he said he originally came out here maybe about three decades ago, and he was looking when he was working in Boston. Wow. He was looking for a place to vacation, and at the time when he asked some of his colleagues, he said that you either go to Cape Cod or you go to Maine, but nobody had really mentioned the Berkshires. And he did a little bit of investigation, found that it was a great place to cycle. Again, somebody who's a cultural enthusiast, found places like Tanglewood, and the theater is certainly just a pretty desirable place to be. And so this was a vacation location and eventually became permanent residence. So normally when we work with a speaker, they're coming from Washington, D.C. or New York or somewhere. This time they're just coming 20 minutes away. So it's a real delight to have somebody local yet world renowned.
Yeah.
To be able to speak with us this year.
And he has a book out, which I think he put it out in 2023. But I haven't seen it, but I think I'm going to run up to the library and get it and try to read it before. That's not going to happen, but I'll have to pick out some pieces. Collision of Power, Trump, Bezos, and the Washington Post was released in October 2023. And think of the names there. Collision of Power, that's the title. Trump, Bezos, and the Washington Post. Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, back when I met him about 6 months ago, was right around the time when Bezos announced the changes of the editorial board at the Washington Post. And Marty was all over the news on so many stations because, you know, he had lived through a previous iteration of it. So they wanted to get his thoughts on it. So, and then 2 days later, I'm having lunch with him.
I applaud you. I applaud the Temple management and all the people who work on this committee for continuing this. You know, we all know of people have money to do it, but for some reason they don't do it anymore. And whether it's church or not for profits or whatever, but I applaud the Temple for doing this and all the people associated with it.
Well, it's you know, it's certainly very important to me. I'm many people know that for this congregation, I'm a fourth generation member. My family has been associated with this temple since 1957. My great grandfather, my grandfather was the treasurer for 17 years. My late father was involved in the board for a couple of years in the 1990s. Myself, and now the fifth generation with my 5-year-old son. So, you know, having this lineage in this congregation, in this community is something that's very important. I'm also somebody who values tradition greatly, particularly in this community when we've lost a lot of things, whether it was due to COVID or just, you know, people leaving the area. So there was a lot of great things and a lot of great traditions that we've had. This is one of them. It's been a longstanding tradition of our congregation. For many years, it was held in either September or October. We pivoted about a decade ago because we realized that there was a pretty big audience that was here during the summer months that come up here for Tanglewood or, you know, Berkshire Theater Festival that might be interested in what we do. So we sort of pivoted towards doing it in the last Sunday in August, just so that we can make sure that crowd can be here too if they really want to. But and again, I was lucky enough to know Armand and Donald Feigenbaum, and I knew just how important their mother was to them. And I'll just tell you a story. In 2010, we were celebrating the temple's 140th anniversary, and I was charged with, you know, being the young guy around, I was charged with the task of putting together a slideshow of about 15 or 20 minutes for our anniversary, set it to music, see, you know, kind of know the audience and see who's going to be there. And I knew that Armand and Donald were going to be there. And I wanted to find a way to make them feel good. So I reached out to one of our former chairs of the lecture who's still involved with it. And I said, do you have something at Armand Donald that might make them smile in the lecture? And she said, well, I don't have a ton of pictures of them, but I have one of their mother. And I said, if you put that in, I think they would be over the moon. And so I did. And after we finished showing the slideshow, I've never seen, you know, 85, 90 year old men run up to me so quickly. It just come up and just thank you for including our mom. That stuck with me. for a long, long time, and understanding that, you know, what she meant to them, and how they wish to celebrate her legacy years later. So I joined the committee myself in 2000, I think just beginning with the 2013 lecture was the first one that I was involved in. I became the co-chair of the lecture series in 2017. And I did it for a number of years with Andy Hochberg. And Andy, longtime attorney in Pittsfield, was also a past president of the congregation. And Andy and I did it together for 4 years. And then for the last 5 years, I've been the sole chair of the lecture series. So it's a great honor for me to continue this in the greater community. And I know that, you know, many in Pittsfield and Berkshire County look forward to this evening every year and look forward to finding out who we have. But but even just, you know, just for the life of the congregation to continue this lecture series, it was certainly what Armand and Donald had intended. And I'm very pleased and grateful that we're continuing to fulfill their mission.
I think too, it brings awareness of the entire community. When these people come up, like Howard Dean, Katie Kay, Brett Stevens, all these people that have come through the years, Julian Bond, I caught some, you're not going to believe this, I caught some criticism because I had a show about the vice president coming to the Colonial this year. She was running for president, Kamala Harris. And my feedback was, whether you vote for her or you're this or you're that, the vice president of the United States is coming to the Colonial. That, to me, is very newsworthy.
It happens very, very rarely in my lifetime. The only other notable time that I recall a vice president coming to Berkshire County was when Dan Quayle came in 1991 for Silvio Conti's funeral.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. And I was very, very young at the time, but I remember that.
Yeah. And to me, to kind of beat me up, which, you know, I learned a long time ago when I was doing a call-in show that if you're going to be on public view, you better have the skin of an armadillo, because you could have the good Lord himself and somebody would find something wrong. But my thinking was, what a gold star on the forehead, as they nuns used to do at St. Charles when you did something right, to have the vice president of the United States. So, I mean, what the Feigenbaums have done is kind of the same, the lecture series. Mm-hmm. They brought very notable people, some of whom will really influence society as a whole, to this city.
Yeah, I mean, we do our very best every year to bring in the world leaders of journalism, politics, people that have influenced people who have influenced discourse on a national stage. We always do, we work together as a committee and we identify, you know, we'll identify 12 to 15 people who might be on our radar, and we'll narrow it down to three, and we'll see, we will select a speaker about 9 months in advance.
Wow.
So at the same time, while you're doing that, you can think, okay, this person is going to be a good fit for our audience. But at the same time, you also try to have a little bit of foresight as well into thinking what might be happening in the news at that time.
Yep.
You know, 2 years ago, we had, in November of 2022, we selected Admiral Stavridis.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there tends to be, you know, ongoing conflict around the world. Certainly things happening with Russia and Ukraine. So having somebody who has been involved with national security, foreign policy, was certainly a great fit. Of course, you know, in 2024, last year, we knew it wasn't going to be a presidential election year. So we tended to lean towards trying to find somebody who was a presidential historian. And that's John Heilman has written written a number of pieces with Mark Halperin, who's also a notable presidential historian. Yeah. And he has spoken, he spoke at the Mona Sherman lecture a number of years ago that Ali puts on.
Yeah.
But in his own right, John Heilman is certainly a very visible face on NBC and MSNBC, and knew that he would have some great insight. And at least from what I recall from when I was moderating the lecture, essentially predicted what happened that night.
So we
do our very best, and that's what Armand and Donald wanted. They wanted people who have influenced discourse at the very highest levels to speak to a full house, to speak to a full house of people of all walks of life.
Yeah.
Whether you're a millionaire or whether you don't have a cent to your name. Didn't want to have any roadblock for somebody to be able to have some sort of cultural entertainment, educational enrichment for an evening. And also at the same time to demystify the Jewish house of worship as well. That was also a critical mindset of theirs when they established this in 1967, just due to some anti-Semitic things that had happened to them when they were in their younger days. So they wanted to create a mechanism where anybody of any religion could come see the lecture. And also at the same time, if they had never been in a temple before, come in and see the Ark and the sanctuary and learn what it's about. At the same time, we've always included our rabbis as a very critical piece of our lecture committee. Back in 1967, Rabbi Harold Salzman, the blessed memory, worked with Armand and Donald to create this lecture series. And Harold wound up both as senior rabbi and rabbi emeritus, serving our congregation for 64 years from 1954 until his death in 2018. But at the same time, you know, as we continue with that, our current rabbi, Valerie Lieber, who just started with us in the last 6 weeks or so, she's already part of our lecture committee and has been very involved with the planning as well. But even our previous rabbis, including, you know, Josh Brindell, as you mentioned, we're certainly all very involved in the series.
Yeah, and I think, excuse me, I think it's an alive series, it's an alive presentation. It's not talking about ancient Greece that, you know, it's nice to know about, but like, you know, this is current events, and this particular, in my opinion, this particular presentation would be probably addressing all that's happening now and transforming. I mean, news media is from print to radio and television to, like you said, the internet.
Yep.
What's the podcasting? Podcasting is through the ceiling. I know people that listen to two or three podcasts every day.
Yeah, and Marty, who was in journalism for 40 years, he's lived through every aspect of it.
Probably.
Exactly. When he started in the 1970s, when print journalism was quite heavy, you still just had the three television networks at that point. Yes. And then things have gradually started to change as the news cycle, as I've mentioned, you know, a number of times, that it's become a 24-hour cycle. You can even boil it down to by minute, honestly, the way things go these days. So, you know, what better person to have than somebody who's lived through that? It's probably going to help influence the next part of it as well, you know, even though retired in name, but certainly still very, very active in the journalism world.
Yeah. And I will tell you, too, and kind of an aside off topic, the Berkshire Eagle is, in my opinion, is back to the caliber of paper. It has been for a few years now since I always call him Judge Rutberg. He gets Publisher Rutberg and Kevin Moran and the wonderful reporters, wonderful. You know, Howard Herman, you're not going to get a better sports reporter than Howard Herman. The photographers, I know Ben is retired. I got to get him on this show. Jane Kaufman, so many of the Clarence Fanto. I mean, Clarence Fanto, mm-hmm. He captures, and same with Jane Kaufman, they capture the essence, and others. And those are the two that came to mind,
mm-hmm.
And Howard.
Yeah.
But I liked your coverage of the news.
I do too. And, you know, I can't say enough about Howard. You know, Howard's been a good friend of mine as well. He's worked at the paper for, you know, over 30 years.
Yeah.
I'm a sports enthusiast. So, I'm at a lot of local things. I'm at, you know, when the Pittsfield Suns were at Wacona Park, I'm there a lot. I'm at a lot of high school games. You'll often see me, you know, even dating back to my tenure on the school committee, I would go to a lot of the Pittsfield and Taconic things. But I go to a lot of Little League games too, both in Pittsfield. I go to games in Adams. I always see Howard, no matter where I am. And I take James to my son, James. I take him to UMass basketball games in Amherst. I'm an alum of UMass, and we go to four or five games a year. We go to Williams College basketball games. I always see Howard. I always know that he's going to be there. He's been doing this a long time. Again, it's hard to properly cover something unless you're on site and doing the work and talking to the people that make the games happen. Can't say enough about what he means to this community, for the sports community, and to that paper as well. Again,
I applaud the men and the people who bought that paper, brought it back, and I interviewed them way back. Kevin and Mr. Rutberg, and they said they're going to make it a local paper again. And boy, they've done that. They have, you know, to me, to read a story about a afternoon Red Sox game the next morning at 4:30 or 5 o'clock when I get up.
Yep.
I already know the story, and but Howard brings a lot. Yeah.
But even as I think about the Berkshire Eagle too, but there's other organizations that sort of do the same thing and are trying real hard at that. You know, iBerkshires as well is a critical source that I use as well. You know, Tammy Daniels has done an incredible job.
I read it every morning.
And building that operation up as well. You know, I'll often attend civic events as well in Pittsfield, and you know, see Brittany Polito at so many of them. And, you know, there's been a lot of really good journalists that have come through that paper, online paper, but at the same time, there's one that I think about that no longer exists. And it's unfortunate. I think about the Pittsfield Gazette, and we talk about these values about local journalism having been in local government for a number of years myself, that was my first go-to to read on Thursday night when the paper would be put out at the little stand in between City Hall and the Highland, even though it would come out on Friday, but I knew that it was put in the newsstand on Thursday night. And that was a one-man operation with Jonathan Levine, pretty much. He had a little bit of help, but he pretty much wrote everything. And he did that for 30 years until his health failed him, unfortunately, and he passed away. But he started that in 1991. Really just devoted to civic journalism, and trying to be an independent voice as well, not leaning one way or the other politically if he could. But it was a great resource as well. Jonathan was just also a very passionate theater critic as well, and would attend so many of the local performances and kind of give the 2 cents, but not only, you know, would go to the paid performances at the Berkshire Theater Group or, you know, Williamstown, but Jonathan was also very passionate to make sure that the local, like, Proteus for Pittsfield High School and the Taconic Theater Group were covered as well, even for music as well. As so many people know, and I've talked in my previous appearances on the program, I was involved with the music program at Pittsfield High School. I'm in the Eagles band as well. Jonathan was always at those performances taking pictures as well.
He was, when we had my teacher's closet, the store, we were one of his first accounts, and we were always pleased with the ads that he put in for us. I do, however, have some sad news to close on. A good friend of mine, going back to St. Charles School, he was older than I am.
Yeah.
But Jack Downing, just a wonderful person, started Soldier On, has passed away. And Jack, what you contributed to veterans, of which I am one, who needed all the things that Soldier On provides. Thank you. And Josh, for you and all that the Temple does, I do want to say this. Thank you for your ads about anti-Semitism will not be tolerated.
Yeah, that's driven by the Jewish Federation of the Berkshires. It's a campaign that we have, and I'm involved with that organization as well. It's called Hate Has No Home Here, and it's just a really critical campaign that we have going on all across Berkshire County. So it's run by some really talented people.
Well, I will say this, as far as this program goes, I have no tolerance for anti-Semitic anything. And we are Pittsfield. We don't hate in Pittsfield or Berkshire County. That's my belief. And so in closing, I will say thank you, Josh, for coming on. And to my audience and everybody out there, God bless. And today, try to lift somebody's burden. Don't be a burden. Be someone who's lifting the burden for people. It's a tough world for some folks. We're all in this together. Let's help each other. Really and truly. Josh, thanks a million. And to everyone, God bless. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, Bill.
Be well, my friend. Say hi to James.
And say hi to Roseanne. Thank you.
He's on his way to kindergarten.
Can't wait.
I hope they're ready.
Take care, Bill.
Child. Bye-bye. Thank you, everyone.